morning and welcome to Wellspring, a service of Spectrum Health Zeeland Community Hospital on 1450 WHTC, your hometown station.
Here's Sarah Donkersloo.
Thanks, Duke. Good morning and welcome to Wellspring, a live broadcast sponsored by Spectrum Health Zeeland Community Hospital. My guest this morning is Dr. Philip Tate, an endocrinologist with the Spectrum Health Medical Group. Good morning, Dr. Tate. Really glad to have you here today because we're going to talk about a subject that we've never talked about before on the show, and that was on your recommendation. We're going to talk about a gland in our brain that secretes hormones that influence nearly every part of the body. And as I did some study on this, I was fascinated. What is the gland?
So we're talking about the pituitary gland, which sits at the base of the brain and basically integrates all the brain controls, how we react to stresses and information and the need for rest and all those sorts of things. It integrates that with the rest of the body through the pituitary gland by the way it secretes hormones. Hormones that control cortisol, for instance, thyroid, growth when we're young, ovaries in women and testes in men, influences water balance in the body.
So you think about if it influences all those things in the body, how large is it?
So it's the size of a pea.
The size of a pea.
Yeah. Quite small. It sits just about dead center in the head, directly behind the eyes. And if you had a crosshair from the ears, that would be just about where the pituitary is.
Okay, so you said it controls all of these other things in the body. Let's focus on some of them. I want to first go to what you talked about, water. Water and salt.
Water and salt, yes. So there's actually two parts to the pituitary. The front part, which we call the adenohypophysis, and there will be a quiz on that.
Duke, did you hear that? Adenohypophysis.
Pretty $2 word there.
It's a great big word, and it never comes up in crossword puzzles, I can tell you. So that's the one that controls particularly thyroid, cortisone, ovaries, and testes. The back part of the pituitary gland controls, in one hand, a hormone called oxytocin that stimulates labor and delivery, and then the other one, vasopressin, that helps the kidneys regulate water concentration in the body by how it concentrates or dilutes urine.
Okay, so if that is not working effectively, how would that affect a person?
If you lose that hormone, the kidneys have the capacity to make almost a quart of water an hour if they are unregulated by this particular hormone. So you can imagine that anybody who lacks that is going to be drinking a lot and going to the bathroom a lot.
Okay. Want to talk about another aspect of the pituitary, the growth hormone. Tell us a little bit about it.
Growth hormone specifically stimulates linear growth, general growth as well, muscle somewhat and fat mass, but more linear growth in the bones when we're children. And then with the advent of puberty and ovarian and testosterone, the bones fuse at their final adult height. We still have growth hormone as adults, but it isn't clear that it's particularly important. Don't usually replace it in people that are missing that for some other reason. And not clear that it has a great deal of benefit in adults.
If you have a question, you may call WHTC at 395-1450. That's 395-1450. So let's talk about the growth hormone in a child. How would you know? I mean, are children tested to see if they have enough of this hormone?
Not routinely tested for growth hormone, but when you go to your pediatrician or your family doctor, you know, for babies and for children, they plot a growth chart.
Interesting. I'm knowing it's all coming, you know, I know that with my kids.
Yes.
Every month she would be charting, or every,
right,
you know, the 3 month or the two, whatever it was that they came in.
Right. Weight gain and linear length. Babies, they do length, but after standing, we do height. And some people are taller and some people are shorter, but generally people stay right along a line throughout their childhood up to their final adult growth in their mid-teenage years. And if there's somebody falling off of that curve, That's when the pediatricians and the family doctors get concerned and do more specific testing about growth. Other things can cause deficiency of growth, but certainly they'll check those.
So what type of testing is done then if they're thinking that something may be abnormal?
So there could be a problem with, for instance, if the child is not eating well or allergic to milk or something like that and therefore not getting enough calories, that would cause growth deficiency. Deficiency of thyroid hormone, that causes slow growth. But one of them, if you check out the routine things, well, then we have to start looking at growth hormone.
So if it's found that there is a deficiency, how is a doctor going to treat that?
The testing for growth hormone deficiency gets fairly sophisticated because for most of us, growth hormone is very low during the day and comes out mostly at night.
Oh, we have a call.
Good morning, you're online with the doctor.
I'd like to tell the doctor that my sister-in-law last year had surgery on her pituitary gland, and Dr. Lowry did it, and Dr. One doctor went up through the nose, and then Dr. Lowry took over from going into the brain. But I think they took part of that pituitary gland out. They couldn't get it all out. So I guess you can live without that thing because my sister-in-law is in good shape now, but it acted when she got the trouble with it. It was like she had a stroke or she couldn't handle her hands and she would fall asleep all the time. So then they found out it was a pituitary gland, but it was really quite a touchy surgery. On that thing. Now, I don't know, does he do surgery on that? Or
if you want to hang up, we'll let Dr. Tate address this because I think you're bringing up an interesting, you know, comment here about surgery of the pituitary and why would that occur and, you know, can we live without our pituitary and can you live with a half of one? So if you want to hang up, we'll let Dr. Tate address that. First of all,
thank you.
Surgery of the pituitary.
Surgery of the pituitary. Where the pituitary sits there in the middle of the head turns out to be just behind some of the nasal sinuses. And the easiest way to get at the pituitary is to come up from the nose through those sinuses and up the bottom into the pituitary area there. So that would be the what we call the transsphenoidal or transnasal approach. And that's the easiest way to operate on that. Sometimes those tumors can be so big, however, that they have pressed upwards into the brain mass itself, and patients may require what's called the transfrontal approach, where the neurosurgeon goes in from the top to get better control of that tumor.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the caller said, you know, his sister is doing well, and we're thankful for that. You can live, or what's going to be done?
It sounds like she was already having some pituitary effects. When tumors get that big, they often put a great deal of pressure on the normal pituitary and so that it is not functioning normally. Well, first off, the problem with the tumor is that the pituitary gland sits right close to the optic nerve where the optic nerve enters the brain. So there can be pressure on the optic nerve. Well, we've got to relieve that to preserve vision. If there's dysfunction in the pituitary by this pressure problem, then we start replacing with the medicines. We can certainly replace thyroid, cortisone, most of the other medicines with tablets or oral medicines. Growth hormone in children requires an injection. So we can replace all those things, and people can live quite well without their pituitaries.
Okay, so what we're talking, I'm going to transition a little bit from the growth to the pituitary tumor. How common is it for people to have a pituitary tumor?
Pituitary tumors big enough to cause serious problems are not very common. But on MRI tests, this is a way of imaging the brain, for instance, or CAT scans, done for other reasons usually, it turns out that maybe 5 or 10% of people after the age of about 50 or 60 will have tiny little benign pituitary tumors.
When you say benign, that's a key word, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How often would a pituitary tumor be cancerous?
So cancerous in the sense of spreading to other parts, extremely rare. Dangerous in the sense of invading the brain, putting pressure on the optic nerve, something like that, which can be its own kind of malignancy, makes your health very bad. That is not so rare. I don't know the numbers offhand, but that's something that we attend to pretty carefully.
Okay. If you have a question, you may call WHTC at 395-1450. That's 395-1450. So a pituitary tumor grows very, very slowly.
Very slowly.
You may not even know you have it.
When we find those incidentally discovered tumors, for instance, and we're talking here something maybe an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch, so pretty small, we do all the testing, make sure that they're not making excessive amounts of hormones, because that could make you sick too. And then we just watch. Repeat that MRI in maybe 6 months, no change. Repeat it in a year, no change. Maybe it changes in 3 years or 5 years. Maybe, sometimes, it'll even disappear.
Interesting. We have a call.
Good morning. You're online with the doctor.
Hi. Could you tell me, does the pituitary gland have anything to do with the nerves in the stomach at all?
If you want to hang up, we'll let Dr. Tate address that. The pituitary gland, does it have anything to do with the nerves in the stomach?
It is not directly related to the nerves in the stomach, but because of these other things that it influences, like the cortisone level. Well, people that are deficient in cortisone have a lot of trouble with nausea. And people that get synthetic cortisone-like drugs, one of the things they notice immediately is increased appetite. So the pituitary, through its other functions, can influence GI function, for instance, appetite and stomach things, but it's not directly linked.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that. You talk about cortisone.
Cortisone is a very important hormone. This one is sometimes referred to as a stress hormone.
Okay.
And it's important to have enough of that. The body regulates that carefully, goes up with stress, goes down with rest. There's a normal up and down daily rhythm to that, where it's at its peak just about the time you get up in the morning, and then goes down gradually to almost zero by midnight or 2 a.m.
Okay, so now I guess I'm going to ask a question. You say it's almost at peak when you wake up in the morning. Do we know why that is? I mean, you would think that would be the least
stressful time?
Yeah, or it may be stressful because we're getting up for the day. I don't know.
And that's the thinking, is that it is preparing the body for the stress of the day. It is stimulating the heart, the kidneys, the muscles to get ready, because the day, the activities, eating, all those things are going to start up, and we need to be prepared for that.
Well, that's very interesting. So what if someone has a lack of that in their body?
And that's generally rare to have an isolated deficiency of cortisone, but it certainly can happen. You can also have that as a problem from the adrenal glands. Well, we're not going to talk about that today. But with a deficiency of the pituitary hormone that controls that, people just kind of slowly slow down, grind to a halt. They just don't have much interest in things, not much interest in life, don't eat very well, don't sleep very well. Not very happy, not really sad, just kind of blah.
So what do you do for it?
So give that person back some cortisone, and it's like an instant cup of coffee for somebody who needs to get going in the morning. Their life just lights up. They, oh, well, yes, sir, let's get going again. Let's have some breakfast and get on with the
day. Give
me
a shot.
And will they have to be on that for life then?
Usually, yes. Usually.
Okay.
Most pituitary damage is permanent.
Okay. I know we've been going all over. I mean, isn't it, you know, when you think about it, you think about fascinating about this small, you know, gland that's the size of a pea that controls our whole body. We haven't, and I know this is a whole nother topic for another time, but I just want to talk a little bit about it. We have about a minute and a half. The thyroid.
The thyroid gland helps down in the neck, as everybody knows, lower part of the neck, and helps regulate metabolism, kind of makes everything work together more, kind of like the conductor in the symphony. And that's also regulated by the pituitary gland, and it also has much less than cortisone, but still has an up and down variation where it's a little bit lower at night and a little bit higher early in the day.
Okay. When we talk about thyroid problems, we talk about hypo and
hyper.
Hyper.
Most thyroid problems are directly thyroid problems.
Okay.
It's one of the most common targets when the immune system attacks the body, what we call autoimmune disease. And that can cause either overactive, which is like drinking three pots of coffee a day, or underactive, which again is that kind of slowing down and not so much energy, and I'm kind of cold all the time, and I just don't feel very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being here today, Dr. Tate. And Dr. Tate, for those of you who are listening, was on WZZM last night. He was talking about oxytocin, and in a couple sentences, that's something in the pituitary also. Tell us about that.
Oxytocin was discovered because of its very powerful effect inducing labor at the end of pregnancy and stimulating the baby to be delivered. It's now being looked at because it has a lot to do with social bonding. This was discovered because mothers, of course, bond very strongly with their babies.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it works in other people and in adults in social situations as well, husband and wife.
So
and
people
family.
Could go online, go to WZZM and look up the, I think, their love hormone they're talking about, and they could see Dr. Tate.